make sure you're in fellowship as we are dealing with the categories of love, the three types of love that can be expressed. Obviously, number one category is our love for God. That should take priority in regards to our expression of love, making Him the number one aspect of our life. In so doing, one will maximize then in the following categories and do it appropriately, which category two love is love between husband and wife. And under that category, obviously, there is the family situation with children. And that's where we left off, page 7, subpoint 7 under B. Category 2 love is inclusive of parental love for their children. A affectionate love for the parents of the child and vice versa is to be expected. That is the norm. Titus 2:4, we saw that earlier as it includes commandments for the wife otherwise. To love, for wives to love their children, to be devoted to the children. The divine love is evidenced when the parent overrules any emotions that hinder application or discipline to the children under the principle of love. Understanding the difference between divine love and simply affectionate love. And our highest application, obviously, is to get in fellowship and apply doctrine under divine love. Proverbs 13:24. Again, we live in a society that is more and more taking issue in regards to the fact that the children belong to their parents and not the damn government. And they love to take and interfere in regards to parental rights, respect to their children. You just pray about these things. Be wise and discerning on how you apply them. But the proper procedure in regards to dealing with your children and their upbringing under doctrine is to deal with their sin natures. And that means that you've got to overrule your own emotions and apply doctrine. Proverbs 13:24. He who spares his rod hates his son. You're not willing to, as a parent, deal with your children's STA, apply the discipline necessary through spanking, etc., to help the child deal with their own STA, then you engage in a form of hatred. It doesn't mean hatred. You got to understand hatred runs the gamut from simple disregard in regards to something to, obviously, overt animosity and hatred in regards to someone. And it's a form of hate to not deal with your children's STA, to disregard them, just like it's disregarding a child's spiritual well-being is a form of hatred. See, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. You got to stay on top of the ball game. Recognize when the child's under STA and approach it and correct it appropriately and address it. See, a physical correction coupled with verbal instruction is a norm set forth by Bible doctrine. You're not supposed just to reel off and, you know, start beating the kid. A parent who has doctrine at the forefront of their actions would take the time and explain to the child where they're out of line and why all this is appropriate as necessary. Obviously, if you've told the kid 1,000 times, they already know. Then you might reel off and beat the hell out of them. But anyway, when it's understood, Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom. See, reproof is correction. To correct them, you're under your STA. This is a sin. First of all, you need to rebound. Get in fellowship while you get your spanking. Correct a little SG3 if you're old enough to recognize this. But a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. A spoiled, rotten kid in life, you see him out in the public, in stores, screaming, throwing fits because they're so used to getting what they want and know that they can push their parents to the extreme and that they make enough public ruckus in this regard, you know, the parent will wear down and end up buying it for them. rather than dealing with kids' STA. Of course, you've got all the arrogant idiots that you may run into when you got a situation like that, as one may pull a child aside and give them a quick whack on the rear end to calm them down and let them know, you know, that wants to step in and turn you over to the government. Well, that's just the times we live in, people. We're in the last days. If things like this doesn't even bring out to you that we're in the last days, I wouldn't know what else to tell you in regards to the times in which we live. 50 years ago in this country, it wouldn't have been tolerated for a kid to act out in public like that. People would have looked at their parents and said, "You are idiots. What's wrong with you? Deal with your child." But this is what happens when you get the New Age movement in regards to all this infiltration, in regards to our education system, and all the socialistic, bleeding heart liberals that get their way through special interest groups in regards to people, you know, and money rules rather than ethics and norms and standards and morals, you know, what's right. Okay. That's the way it is. Man, I'm scared to beat my dog in public anymore. No, kidding. I'd kick that little thing if I had to anytime. But he's good. That's why I got him instead of the kid. All right, Dad. Just kidding. Physical correction, coupled with verbal instruction. Give them some doctrine, see. And make sure they understand why this is coming down the pike. D, the parent is to deal with the real problem, which is the child's STA. Marital and family counseling. Come to Bible class, Lake Erie Bible Church, today. If you missed today, you're sunk. But anyway, Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. A kid, as they grow up, kids normally and literally, generally speaking, are idiots. Foolishness. I mean, because they've not grown up, they've not matured yet. And their STA is expressing itself. And they don't have all the norms and standards in regards to how to deal with it. That's your responsibility as a parent, to rear your child this way. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. You want to know how to deal with it? There's your instruction. You don't want to deal with it and let your kid run around like a wild banshee, you know? Then you hate your child. What else can I say? That's what God thinks anyway. This is God's method for training the child to avoid STA activity and the resulting divine discipline. They don't get a hold of their STAs, especially in certain areas now, and they grow up. Now, then look at the possible and potential discipline that they can come under, civilly and otherwise. Proverbs 23:12-13. Apply your heart to discipline and your ears to the words of knowledge. Verse 13, do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die. Now, if you're an idiot and beat him over the head with a baseball bat, obviously he will. But he's assuming that the parent is a normal, caring parent and is not abusive in this fashion. That's why God gave each of us derrieres to come into this world with, so that you can feel the sting of discipline and still move on and live life. See? Disrespectful children, children that talk back. That parents should not allow that. What are you teaching this child? Allowing them to get away with this stuff. So they can grow up and go and try to get a job somewhere and disrespect their authorities and talk back and things of this nature. You know, people have their ideas of what they think are the worst sins of life. I'm here to tell you, the worst sins of life is arrogance and a rebellion of authority. People that get in that mode to me, hold the highest gravity of disrespect in regards to God and His plan. Arrogance, rejection of authority. See. And when you do not deal with your children's respect for authority within the household, then they will grow up and be arrogant in this area of their life. Now that's real life. If you want to live in your fantasy world with all the other lives in this world, well, you know, that's your choice. God demonstrates the same love with discipline for His children. God disciplines as His children. Hebrews 12, 5-11. As Hebrew Christians were under a lot of persecution and pressure, and many of them were caving in regards to the pressure of mainline Judaism as they were trying to live a Christian life. The same type of people that crucified Christ under that religious sect. And the problem is that they would get under their own STAs and get emotionally wrapped up and out of joint in regards to the pressures. And they considered everything that was coming down the pike as undeserved suffering. When in fact, a lot of it still was deserved suffering because they wouldn't deal with their own STAs in certain situations like this. And this is, that's the background that brings us into this. In verse 5, and you have completely forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. As a previous context tells them that, you know, you haven't really expressed much willpower to overrule your own STAs and temptation, have you? But anyway, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. As believers, God disciplines us as His children. When we are not willing to deal with our own STAs on a level acceptable, He will intercede on our behalf. Nor faint when you are reproved by Him. Sometimes discipline can be very harsh. For those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines. He scourges every son whom He receives. All of us are candidates for this and will be recipients of God's discipline because we all have an STA. We all have our weaknesses. See, it is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whose father does not discipline? The son of a normal father. But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, you are bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us. And we respected them, shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? Again, looking at the normal parental setting. Verse 10, for they discipline us for a short time as seemed best to them. But He disciplines us for our good, to help us maximize regards to our spiritual advance and application in life, that we may share His holiness and operate under fellowship, whether running under our STAs. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful. It hurts. And God usually knows where to get you. That's one thing about Him. He knows exactly where to get you. Whenever we need to get our eyes opened up with respect to capitulating to the STA and running amok, unbridled with it. But sorrowful. It's not joyful, but it's sorrowful. That's the facts of it. Yet to those who have been trained by it, when you orient and acclimate and you recognize, all right, this is what's going on in my life, and you get your spiritual act back together, you will find ultimate peace in regards to your Christian life. And that is the emphasis, who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Neither are parents to exasperate or incite to anger their children. You're not to seek to provoke them to anger. That doesn't mean you can't tell them what to do and when to do it. Telling your kid to take the trash out is not provoking them to anger. It's twitting the hell out of them. You know, constantly telling them how stupid they are and things of this nature. You know, the verbally abusive type of person. Colossians 3:21. Fathers, do not exasperate your children that they may not lose heart. With the discipline, you are to balance it with the encouragement that will bring up a well-rounded, emotionally well-rounded, and hopefully spiritually well-rounded child. They do good, you acknowledge it. They do bad, you acknowledge it. See. All right, see, category 3 love now is love for friends. Friendship love. This looks at love is applied in a platonic relationship. One, David and Jonathan illustrate this type of love. Jonathan, the son of King Saul, and he and David were of best friends. And Jonathan was, as with David, and as with his father, albeit short-lived for his father, was positive. But Jonathan's problem was that he would not separate from his father when his father was out to kill David. And God took him out, sent him to death right along with his father ultimately. But either way, he and David were very good friends, and he helped David out quite a bit in regards to his Saul. 18:1-4. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Don't read into that verse any more than what's there. That's friendship love, platonic love. I can just see the liberals going, "See what this is? What's going to do with them? God's going to do to you." And Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. This is early on in regards to the whole relationship. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. And his expression of friendship. They became close partners, man. Good buds. Close knit. 2 Samuel 1:26. And obviously, Jonathan, his dad's king, so you know, he's got lots of goods. David, he was a shepherd boy. The family came out of, was not exceedingly wealthy. And Jonathan shares his wealth with him, and gave him things of that nature. 2 Samuel 1:26. I'm distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. David here. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. Sometimes having a good male friend does satisfy any aspects in regards to your life. And the friendship, the camaraderie, the understanding, etc., that comes from, if you will, male bonding. Again, that is not with sexual connotation. It's sad that I would have to even say that, but you never know. So, two, true friend loves consistently at all times. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Willing to help out when necessary, things of this nature. Come to the aid of another. 18:24. A man of many friends comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. It's quality, not quantity. See, that's what you're looking for in a friend. Quality, not quantity. It's better to have one good friend that's faithful to Bible doctrines, positive, willing to hang in there and encourage you and exhort you in regards to things, to have 1,000 negative friends that really have no true concern in regards to your spiritual well-being. And you get too many friends, next thing you know, you're being taken advantage of. True friend, point three, tells you what you need to hear. Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Friend sees you going out of line, stepping out of line of doctrine, etc., and taking inappropriate action in your life and calls you to task over it. That's the wound. So it helps you reorient and get your eyes back where it's supposed to be, etc., etc. And that, obviously, understand, Proverbs is written assuming that Bible doctrine is the issue at hand. So a true friend will tell you what you need to hear. A true friend is extremely grace-oriented. Is not the kind of person that's going to go in and nitpick your life, recognizing that they have their own STA to deal with. But when you're engaged in things that are really faulty thinking that is detrimental in regard to your spiritual life, human viewpoint on that level, actions otherwise, a true friend will say, hey man, that's wrong. You need to back off from that. For a true friend does not malign. Psalm 15:3. It's not one that is going to attack you with the scourge of the tongue in a slanderous way. Backstab you, if you will. That type of scenario. Psalm 15:3. In regards to those who are positive, which would make the best of friends, one who walks with integrity, works righteousness, speaks truth in his heart, verse 2, he does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up reproach against his friend. He's not a troublemaker, seeking to try to stir conflict between the friendship. True friend shows hospitality. Luke 11. Five and six. He said to them, suppose one of you shall have a friend, and shall go to him at midnight and say to him, friend, lend me three loaves, for a friend of mine has come to me from a journey, and I have nothing set before him. And showing hospitality. Obviously, friend in views, those who are positive, like-minded, in which we have our closest associations of life. And when someone may appear at your door or whatever, comes over, you want to provide for them so that they can have an enjoyable evening, see, in a logistical way. And you may have to even go to another friend to get what you need sometimes in order to extend your hospitality in that respect. Six, the maximum expression of love is physical sacrifice. John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, and that one lay down his life for his friends. That means sacrifice his life. And truly, while the ultimate sacrifice is, you know, putting yourself in front of a bullet, so to speak, being checked out of this world, when one commits himself to the truth of Bible doctrine in order to help sustain and encourage others around them with respect to doctrine, they're giving up whatever else in their life to make doctrine NPR in their particular niche. They're in the process of laying their life down and sacrificing it. Of course, Christ is the ultimate and premier example, as he gave his life for all of mankind. You are my friends if you do what I command you. And there, we have our term philos. And that tells you that personal friendship, affection that Jesus Christ or God has for the believer is dependent upon their reciprocation and obedience, submission to the truth of Bible doctrine. Otherwise, that affection does not exist. So, 7. A friend of the cosmos is not a friend of God. There's good friendship and there's bad friendship. And that which you do not want to embrace as your companion in life or friendship and friends in life, close friends, as we would say on a social basis, who you're going to have over for pizza, hang out with, run with, things of that nature. Those who cling to the world, the negative world, they are not the ones that we are to go after to establish a friendship with on this level. 1 John 2:15. Do not love the world. Stop loving the world. Nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. That which stems from negative volition in the STA, the human viewpoint that is associated with it, that is not to be what we pursue in regards to relationships in this fashion. So a believer who desires friendship with negative volition is not a friend of God. James 4:4, those who follow through with it. You adulteresses, that's spiritual adultery. Do you not know that friendship with the world, and again, as I brought out when we went through this book, this term friendship means physical relationships. Physical relationships. We're not talking about relationship to objects. We're talking about relationship with people. People who are negative and are following the norms and standards of the cosmos, apart from the norms and standards of the truth of Bible doctrine, under negative volition. And if you want to make, you want to embrace these people as your friends, just understand this one thing. It is hostility towards God. Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. The reversionist, etc. 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 18 also teaches the principle of the incongruity of relationships such as this. The disparity is not logical. 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 18. Stop being bound together with unbelievers. Negative volition. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? For what fellowship has light with darkness? These are all rhetorical questions expecting none answer. There's none. For what harmony has Christ with Belial? For what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? For what union or agreement has the temple of God with idols? These people are not, who are negative, do not truly worship God. See, they're not, they have their own idols. Their idols may be any aspect of the cosmos that they're putting before God, see, in this respect. But we are the temple of the living God, just as God said. The category 4 love then is love for one's enemies. 1, we are commanded to apply divine love to our enemies. The term to love your enemies is out of the agape word group, Luke 6:27-35. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those that hate you. Verse 35. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And you should give without strings attached. Expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great. Get in fellowship, make the application. So what if they take off and abuse it? You know, your application or whatever. That's not the issue. The issue is doing it right with your heart being right before God. And you will be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. God extends His grace towards all. So we are to emulate that when opportunity arises. Two, believers are to pray for those who persecute them rather than reacting with our own STAs in regards to try praying about it. Matthew 5:43-48. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. In order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax gatherers do the same. And if you greet your brothers only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same. Therefore, you are to be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. To emulate in regards to application of how to deal with those who might be antagonistic or negative to Bible doctrine. Be civil to them rather than acting like they do in antagonism towards you. Three, you are to avoid revenge tactics and use opportunities to bless them. Romans 12:20-21. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him, and if he is thirsty, give him a drink. In application. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals upon his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Apply Bible doctrine in his stead. And your application, divine love and disrespect, and the person wants to remain antagonistic and hostile to you, put it in God's hands, God will deal with it. And you heap coals on people who are antagonistic. Some people, you know, they just have a disregard. And they don't come up and necessarily take issue in regards to things in your life. Some people do, though. They just can't let things drop. They've got to take issue with it. And can be antagonistic. And rather, again, rather than react with, emotionally react under your own SCA and continue the conflict, etc., seek to apply grace, if possible. And it may not be possible. And if they're going to pull a gun on you, man, I'd either be running or find my own gun. Okay. But if possible, apply grace. And then apply doctrine towards them. And, you know, your prayer may be as simple as God, you know, cause them to pull their horns in. Maybe it'll help them avoid some cursing and judgment that's going to come on otherwise, you know, if they don't. But either way, if they remain antagonistic, God will intercede, and they build up wrath as they continue to express this antagonism towards you. And you never know what kind of test you'll have in life and with whom. You just never know. For it is through this application that God is allowed to apply wrath on your enemies on your behalf and in turn bless you. Proverbs 21-25. your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. And you will heap burning coals on his head, the same principle. And the Lord will reward you for your application of doctrine. The north wind brings forth rain and a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. It is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Okay, so I read a little bit too far. That's all right. But they may apply grace, apply doctrine. Let God deal with it. Five, as you apply category four love, you imitate God's love as seen on the cross. Jesus Christ gave up his life even for his enemies. Matthew 5, 44 through 48. Six, this principle is taught under the law. Exodus 23:4. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey wondering why, you should surely return it to him. So this application is an example of application applying towards your enemy. Something's about, they're about to experience a loss, and you can step in and help and make application. Never know when it might turn the whole relationship around when you do apply. Seven, this category is an acid test of your relative maturity. And that was brought out in the Matthew passage. Therefore, you are to be mature. That's what perfect there emphasizes. Eight, these verses are not in conflict with bona fide violence, such as war. Going to war because of a predator nation being hostile and attacking you, or an ally. Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 5. That violence is obviously bona fide. And you wouldn't be handing them bread and giving them water. You'd be trying to plug them between the eyes with, you know, your bow and arrow or whatever. Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 5. And the Lord said to Moses, see, I make you as God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall speak to Pharaoh, that he let the sons of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Doesn't mean he coerced his volition, but he is going to cause Pharaoh to express his negative volition. That's what that means. That I may multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. And when Pharaoh will not listen to you, then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring out my hosts, my people, the sons of Israel, from the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst. I'm in the wrong bit. So that's what experience numbers do on me. I can feel eyes staring right in my head. Where the hell are you reading that from? All right. Let's try this one. Maybe somebody needs to hear that for some reason. You never know. When the Lord your God shall bring you into the land to possess the land, he shall clear away many nations before you, and the Hittites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and stronger than you. They all probably have militaries built up, advanced in that regard, and here you got this, if you will, ragtag of Jews coming out from, you know, previous environment of slavery and in the wilderness, 40 years, etc. And when the Lord your God shall deliver them before you, and you shall defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them. They are given divine directive, go in and wipe these people out. Now this is all with divine directive. These nations are negative. They're heavily in idolatry, etc. And God's going to bring national judgment upon them. And he's going to use the Jews to establish their own nation as a whipping post. But understand, he gave them divine directive to do this. Doesn't give nations rights to go in and just attack somebody in this regards otherwise, under preemptive clauses or anything. War is bona fide to deal with aggressor or predator nations. If a nation is not bothering anybody around them, you're supposed to leave them alone. But look what they're doing, the bleeding hearts. Look what they're doing to their people and all this other stuff. So, that's their business. They're a nation. They're a divine institution. And that's the rulers. God's the one that's in charge of putting all rulers and placing them. Yeah, I think these things out doctrinally speaking. And maybe that's just a curse that comes upon them for their own negative volition. You never know. See. But people don't. They think with their emotions. They don't think with sound reasoning. Anyway. We'll bear them before you, and you shall defeat them. Then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them. Everybody goes, we don't serve the same kind of God that's in the Old Testament. Yeah, we do. The only trouble is you're not serving him. And you don't understand him, see. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. Now, immediately people come out and say, well, see, interracial marriage, God's against that. No, what he's against is marrying negative volition. This is why they're going in there to wipe them out to begin with. They're hostile, predator types of nations, heavy into idolatry, negative as a fence post, and God's going to wipe them out, and they're not supposed to interbreed with negative volition, see. But, again, how people take so easily take the scripture and rip it out of context. But thus you shall do to them. Verse 4. For they will turn... See, here it is. For they will turn your sons away from following me. If I just waited, I would explain myself with the Bible. But I explained the Bible beforehand. To serve other gods. See, they're negative. They're religious idolaters. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. That's the way you want to go as a nation. You know, Israel, who has made a covenant with me. I told you, you know, if you didn't follow my commandments, I was going to kick you in the rear end, big time. But thus you shall do to them. You shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars. See, this is how heavily involved these people, these nations are. And hew down their Asherim, their phallic reversionist types of cults, and burn their graven images with fire. For you are to be a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his own possession out of all the peoples that are on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love on you, nor choose you because you were more in number than any of these peoples, for you were the fewest of the peoples. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore to your forefathers, Abraham, Abrahamic covenant. And the Lord brought you out by the mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. But anyway, war, bona fide war. You go to war, you better be willing to shoot the enemy. If you want to come home, not in a box. B, then other bona fide acts of violence is capital punishment. Genesis 9, 5, and 6. These are the norms and standards of using law as a law. The nation that wants to be blessed by God. And capital punishment, there's certain STA types. God says, get them out of this world. Genesis 9, 5, and 6. And surely I will require your lifeblood from every beast. I will require for every man, from every man's brother, I will require the life of a man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by his blood shall be shed. Execute him. And you engage in murder. For in the image of God, he made man. Romans 1:32. Country just, it truly is Babylon. It's just a band of confusion. Some states hold to capital punishments, some, you know, won't even look at it. It's kind of refreshing. It was one of those programs called Lockdown, where they show prisons, so they show these death row inmates. And most of the time you get on there and these people on death row, oh, I'm against capital punishment, you know, because they're going to kill me. You know, because I engage in some heinous crimes, such as, you know, raping little girls and killing them and beheading them and things of that nature. And it was really refreshing. There was a guy on there last night. He says, I was against capital punishment before I engaged in killing four members of my family. He said, I'm still against it. I don't care whether I'm going to death chamber or not. That's what I deserve. And I go, wow. You know. That's pretty cool. Maybe you don't see it, but I sure do. Maybe God gave him a more peaceful death. Get some drugs and go to sleep and bingo, you know, you're out of here until you're out of here. Your soul's gone. What's my body doing laying down that table? Who are you, Mr. Angel? And although they know the ordinance of God, Romans 1:32, that those who practice such things are worthy of death. And there you have a list. They not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. And then 13:4. By the way, homosexuality was in that list. If you haven't ever read that passage before. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ, make no provision for the flesh in regard to this. Less, that's not what I want. Four, there is a minister of God, that's civil authority, to you for good, to help keep law and order in the land. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. They had the right of capital punishment, of execution, of certain SGA types. You know, our country is so arrogant, they raise hell because other countries carry out capital punishment and their means of dealing with certain breakings of law in their country, like Cain and all these other things. And you got the UN stepping in, you know, and all this crap. The law is pretty clear. You do this and you're going to get punished. You're going to get Cain, you know, 60 lashes or whatever. I remember that guy that got Cain in our country raised hell about it because he went around spreading graffiti, and the law was clear in this country. You're in the country, you're under their law. Remember that if you're ever visiting a foreign country. See, you walk away from this country, you don't have the little liberal bleeding hearts that are going to support you anymore. You walk into their statutes, their laws, and the consequences of breaking their law, obviously you will fall under it. If you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God. How God is designed to deal with certain STA types, an avenger brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. And then the final category is love for the royal family, which we'll pick up Tuesday evening. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit continue to lighten us these.